Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome to the family with
M. Howard Gelfand
and Andy Rampernard.
It's so funny you say that because people still either call you Gelfand or M. Howard Gelfand. They never say, "Hey, how's Mike doing?"
No, they never have. Like when I was in high school, for some reason, even though most people were called by their first name, I was called Gelfands.
Gelfands?
Now, mind you, I'm going to high school with intellectuals, right?
Yeah.
These are people, you know, who could just absolutely, you know, do geometry questions like, you know, like that I'd just be staring at. They'd do it in 30 seconds, but they would still call me Gelfands.
Gelfands.
I don't know.
Maybe it was a pun that went over your head.
It could have been. Well, everything went over my head when I was in high school.
It's all true. There's no question. All right. What's new in the world today from the two of you?
A lot of work in our garage yesterday. My hands are not happy.
Why are you working on your garage?
Because it's a mess.
What do you mean cleaning it up?
Well, we're cleaning it up and upgrading some things about it.
Oh, okay.
We've got going to be getting a new car relatively soon, and we have to make room.
Yes, but well, yeah, if you have to make room, that's a lot of work, no doubt about
it
that.
It sure is. So I was doing that for 8 hours yesterday.
No question about it. So, Mr. Gelfand, I just... you know, that's been watching the news a little bit lately, and I just, and if you don't want to talk about this, this is fine too. I got no problem with that, but I just cannot believe how Americans have turned on the Jews. I just don't understand where the hell that came from.
Well, now, you know, one of the interesting things now is that, so you got a lot of people who are pretending to be champions of the Jews, right?
Yeah.
Who never were and never will be.
Right.
So now it's like target practice. So now, like there's one House member. I can't remember her name, but she prides herself on shooting down these anti-Semites, right? So she shot down a couple of university presidents, and she's getting a lot of credit. And now she's going after the president of Columbia University. Well, this woman at Columbia University has nothing. The university itself has nothing to do with these people, like the people, say, at Harvard, you know, who were just basically, you know, babying the anti-Semites. But the one from Columbia, totally different. They suspended, I think, so far, 15 students were suspended or just expelled for anti-Semitic things that they said or did. Nothing like that's going on. But this woman, she already got all the low-hanging fruit, right? So now she's going after the more difficult targets.
So basically you're saying that she's, I mean, there's a hell of a lot going on at our university, anti-Semitic behavior, certainly pro-Palestine. And I would like to sit down with all those college students and go, okay, tell me all about Palestine. I want to hear your version. Yeah, tell me about Palestine, because they have no idea where it is, what it's about, what they do. Yeah. They have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Right, and tell me who the war criminals are.
Yeah,
I want to hear. Yep. I want to hear that one, because if you don't say they're all over the place, they're on both sides, then you don't know shit.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, I remember going through this in the late '60s, and again, I understand that it had to do with the assassination of John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and how many others. There were about five of them that got shot back in those days.
Yeah,
of course, Robert Kennedy later on. So I remember the hatred flowing through the country at that time.
Oh, man.
But the hatred now may be surpassing that.
Well, I told you this story, I know, but just to reference it one more time. So I was a senior in high school. So it had to be, I would say it was 1967 when Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I was looking for a good story for my student newspaper. You know, I didn't write about things like what the theme would be at prom, that kind of stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah, I could understand that.
So I was at a Billy James Hargis rally. Billy James Hargis was kind of the precursor of these many of these, you know, right-wing auditorium ministers, priests, whatever.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
I guess they're mostly ministers, yeah. And so he was babbling, you know, all sorts of right-wing crap in between prayers. Mm-hmm. But mostly he was there to collect money. That was basically why he held these rallies.
Collect money for himself.
Well, right, yes. Oh. Well, what he said was, you know, he waited until the end, and then at the end he had what he called the prayer auction. Billy James Hargis did. You can look it up.
Mm-hmm. I remember Billy James Hargis.
Yeah, well, I know you, yeah. Hargis, yeah. So he was saying, you know, dear Lord, we need our help, Lord. You know that we've strived our best to spread our religion around the world in 84 different countries. We're heard on the radio. But, Lord, you know we cannot do it without money. And we are in a bind right now, Lord. And then he would say, we need $50,000 right now to continue our mission. And Lord, I know you have given us one person in this audience who will write a check today for $50,000. And then, of course, there's utter silence, right?
Right.
There's supposed to be. And then he says, all right, our Father, we must divide the burden. Then he goes to 25, right? Two for 25,
yep.
Then 12-5, 62-50, right? He goes right down the line.
Yep.
And until he's down to, like, you know, $5. And he gets his money. These people, obviously, are very religious people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he's going through that. And then in the process of this, someone, one of his aides, gives him a little note, passes a note to him. And he says, ladies and gentlemen, I've just been informed that Martin Luther King was assassinated tonight. The crowd erupts in cheers.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that one.
Yes.
And why were they cheering for the death of Martin Luther King, who tried to bring us all together?
Well, why do you think?
Which, by the way, is why he was killed, because he was trying to bring people of color together. And I'm talking about all the colors from honky on.
Yeah.
But he's trying to bring us all together. But still, we've learned nothing, Mike.
No.
We still won't come together. A good example of that is publicly funded NPR has 87 employees. Not one of them is a Republican, which I don't care because I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. Mm-hmm. But we just cannot get along with one another to this very day. I just don't get it.
You know, that's when I was much younger, I should have claimed to be a Republican. Maybe they would have hired me because they needed a token.
You see?
I mean, I cover all the boxes, right?
I would think so. You know, Jewish, pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, pretty much. No question about it.
Well, I mean, journalists are supposed to be a pain in the ass.
Well, that's true.
So yeah, that one, right, you know, I get a pass for that one. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's obvious that this is a two-way thing because Republicans probably are not that interested in working for NPR. Now, I don't hear much NPR. What I hear seems to be pretty, it doesn't seem to be controversial, but I guess I must be missing something.
Well, I don't know. I don't listen to NPR.
No, I don't listen to much because, you know, as you know, I don't drive hardly ever. So
yeah, that's true.
So then I miss a lot of that. I guess I could listen to it at home, but who's going to do that?
Why do you think it is so difficult for people? And I'm asking you this, and I know I talk about it, you know, quite a bit because it was so important to me. I grew up in a neighborhood of Black, Catholic, and Jewish people.
Yeah.
I don't remember any turmoil much. I mean, later on in the late 60s, it came upon us.
Right.
But I'm talking about as a little kid in the late 50s, early 60s, we all got along just fine. Why is it now there can't be one of you in my group? It has to be all me, none of you. Have we always been that way? Has it gotten worse? Has it gotten better? I don't get it.
Well, obviously, there's a huge wedge that's being driven by politicians.
Yes,
no doubt. And we know what that goes back to. They're being paid to do that.
That's correct. It's always about the money, though, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, these days, that's, you know, a small group of people have made it about the money. It's not what the voters want. It's not what the people want, although I guess eventually it's what they'll all want, the way it's going. But right now, you know, people don't want it. Just like the vast majority of people want significant gun control regulations.
Yeah.
But it never happens, does it?
No.
So I wonder why that is.
Too much money. Too much money involved.
And yeah, and even though the NRA is bankrupt now in more ways than one, even though they're bankrupt, I mean, the money's still rolling in, and even if it wasn't, these people are so conditioned to doing everything the NRA wants that they would do it anyway.
Yeah, probably true. Andy, people your age, how do you see this?
Probably about the same way you do.
Just you don't understand why you all have to be just like me or I don't want you around me. That's so weird to me.
Well, like Mike said, they've been conditioned to by people who make profit off of it.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, growing up, like I said, I had Jewish friends. The black friends I had were Catholic because I went to school with them. That's, you know, how I got to know them and all the rest of it. There were not very many Protestants in that neighborhood, so I'm sure we hung out with a few, but there were not very many there. I don't remember, at least at a low grade, younger grade, not low grade, second graders, third graders, fourth graders, whatever it is. Why was it so easy for us to get along? Because we hadn't been exposed to the hatred as 6, 7, 8-year-olds? Is that why we all could get along? Because we didn't watch the news?
Yep, probably.
Yeah? What do you think, Mike?
When I coached Little League, I started out with the cute little kids who were playing T-ball, right?
Yeah, oh sure, yeah.
And those kids were so happy. Those kids were thrilled to be playing T-ball. And you know, all the other coaches were like, I can't wait till I can coach the major leagues, right?
Yeah.
Me, I would have stuck with the kindergarten kids. I would have actually—
Because they're phenomenal.
I would have impregnated my wife 10 times so I could just keep coaching those kids.
Yeah, because they're just grateful to be there.
Yeah, it's their thing, right? And that's what they care about. It's something that's all theirs. And so they love it, you know. And then you could see as they got older, they were able to understand some of the bigoted things that some of their parents were saying, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe some of their friends. But most of it, I think the real anti-Semitism, which I could detect, you know, it's like I could look at parents as they scowled at me and kind of figure out there weren't many. Don't get me wrong. It didn't permeate every pore. But I knew which ones were like that. And the kids have obviously at some point they realize it too. Remember that kid who called in one day, and he called in. He had just come back from fighting in Iraq, reason he called in was because he wanted to say something nasty about me, right? Remember that?
God, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was bitter about me. Well, because he'd played on a Little League team, and that Little League team had lost to our team, I suppose, a number of times.
Okay.
And his dad was like, he'd been in the military for many years, you know. And you could just see it, you know. You could just see it. It was just, it's sad.
Do you think I'm just lucky that I grew up around so many different kinds of people that I never had to deal with that?
Well, I mean, my mother, of course, she went back to, you know, she was born in 1922, and she went to North High and Lincoln and, you know, all the schools there. And that was certainly what she recalled about her childhood and her high school days, too, is that she would say it all the time, you know, and we all got along and there was none of this crap.
And let's not forget that in the 1940s, Minneapolis North High School was the highest-rated academic private school in America.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not making that up. It was the highest-rated academic public school in America.
Well, think of it. A lot of those kids' parents had come here from Eastern Europe.
Yes. Yep. A lot.
And they truly, it was really a religion to them more than Judaism was. The religion to them was, these kids are going to get a great education, and they won't have to live in a ghetto when they get older.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of those kids, they learn because their parents made them learn.
Well, I think that's true. But you also, and I've talked about this before as well, going to my Jewish friends' houses, black friends' houses, the Italian family, I learned a lot from all of their fathers.
Sure.
Just because, and mothers too, obviously, But just by paying attention, again, whether it's the Italian culture, Jewish culture, whatever culture it is, you can learn a lot if you just shut up and pay attention.
Right. Well, as the great anthropology professor Jack Weatherford informed me many, many years ago, there's no progress without the creative clash of cultures.
There you go. And we stay away from that right now, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we run from that.
It's unbelievable.
We are insular, yeah. We don't want to learn anything. No.
Right. Right, that's very true. Why do we do that? Why do we not want to learn? I see it, because I thought just learning about other things like cultures and your religion and your, you know, whatever. I loved learning all that stuff, so I didn't know about that. But later on in life, well, I used to sit around in Golden Valley, you know, the golf course over there, and talk to the, because they had a lot of Jewish members there at Golden Valley, but still do, I think.
Well, it was like the only country club that, besides Oak Ridge, that would have them, right?
I believe that's true, yeah. But I learned so much, but I would sit there, I had a friend, Norm. Norm is this nice Jewish guy, nice Jewish man. So every time I would see him, because he knew that I could speak a lot of Yiddish, just from being around it as a kid. But he would teach me new words. And my favorite one that he taught me, and he said, I've got one for you you're never going to be able to do. I said, what's that? He goes, Srera. I said, I know what that means. He goes, no, you don't. I said, yes, I do. Basically, it just means stuff, right? That's kind of, Srera is kind of like stuff. But I love the fact that I knew those things, because they were shocked, by the way, that a little Catholic kid even knew anything about the Jewish culture.
Yeah, I didn't know much myself, so I can appreciate that. Well, a guy who taught me a lot of Yiddish, it wasn't my parents. My mother spoke a little. My dad hardly any, because he grew up in Tulsa. And
So
there wasn't much of a community there to share that. And when there's no community, it just dies out. But Carlin taught me some great Yiddish, because Neil Carlin did, yeah. One of the phrases he taught me that I still use occasionally is he'd say, oh man, he's a shandafit a goyim.
A shandafit a goyim. God, I haven't heard. You know, the last time I heard that
yeah.
was probably about 60 years ago.
Well, yeah, and I had never heard it until I knew Carlin. But for those who don't know, it basically means that he's such a disgrace.
Yeah,
that,
disgrace.
That Gentiles would look upon that and point their fingers, which it takes a lot of words.
Yes, it does take a lot of words, but can we, here's the part that's kind of disappointing to me, because I'm talking about the mid-50s, late-50s, that era of my life, learning all these things, because I wanted to learn those things.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to speak a little Italian, a little French, some Yiddish. I learned to, you know, just to be able to communicate a little bit with the parents of my friends.
Right.
And definitely if the grandparent, grandma or grandpa lived with them, they couldn't speak English at all.
Right.
So if I wanted to speak to them, I had to learn their language to speak. And I'm not talking about the whole language, but certain trigger things, how you doing, things like that.
Mm.
People do that anymore? Andy, do you think people do that right now?
Probably not as much as they used to.
But it was such a nice way to feel that this is all one neighborhood. And learning, you know, how to do this, how to do that, what's right, what's wrong, all that kind of stuff. I love doing this. I really, really enjoyed growing up there for that very, very reason, you know.
I don't think neighborhoods are really as big of a thing as they used to be.
No, I think that's a very good point that, oh, you're my neighbor. There are people that have no idea who the hell their neighbor is.
Oh,
and I'm talking next door.
There are also people who wish they didn't.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Are you clearing your throat there?
I don't think nothing, no. Just an observation.
Don't worry about a thing. Yeah, I was watching this once again, and I kind of talked about it this morning a bit on Facebook, how, I'm supposed to hate Biden, and I'm supposed to hate Trump, and I'm supposed to hate this guy, and I'm supposed to hate... I don't want to waste time hating. If I don't like you, I'll just stay away from you. I don't want to hate anybody.
I think you could actually be on the jury.
I might be able to be on the jury, because I don't know if they're going to find... Are you going to be able to find 12 jurors to be on that jury panel?
Well, they lost one today already.
Oh, they lost one today?
Yeah. So they're going backwards as of 9 a.m.
What happened?
I think the juror said the juror bailed. Actually, is what happened.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't that they discovered anything. The juror just bailed. The juror said, "Wait a minute, now I'm starting to get the idea that my life will be in danger if I'm on this jury."
Oh.
So that juror said, "I'm out of here."
Do you think that's a point? Did he have a point, or she have a point?
I think it's a very logical fear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Probably.
I mean, I mean, with the atmosphere we have today, and with you have all sorts of people who have already, who are already. Well, I mean, look, Trump himself is trying to prejudice everybody. He's talking about how that, I mean, it's a real thing to worry about the judge's safety and his daughter's safety.
Yeah.
When you got the former president, he's going on his Truth Social every day, just with the most vitriolic language about these people.
About the judge?
The judge, yeah. Mershon.
How can you do that legally? You shouldn't be able to do that legally, can you? Comment on a judge?
No.
Who's,
Well, no. I mean, it's prejudicial for one thing.
Yeah,
for another
absolutely.
Another thing, there was a gag order, but whether it included the judge or how it did seems to be in question. But, yeah, so now the judge, but the judge is, well, he may be a liberal, whatever, but you can tell that he's trying to be fair because he's, the prosecution said, we need this gag order enforced. Mm-hmm. And the judge said, well, we'll look into it and we'll give them 5 days and we'll see if they calm down their language. So right now, that whole thing is in limbo.
So a gag order for who?
Well, it would basically be for everybody who's involved in the trial.
Yeah. I kind of just assumed they would do that anyway. Is that not the case? Don't they always do that in cases as big as this one?
Very often. I think what's happening is we're seeing the former president get special favors here because the judge doesn't want to look like he's prejudicial.
But see, they're claiming the exact opposite, that he's getting no favors at all.
Well, yeah, and a lot of that, it's interesting because, that's going to happen no matter who the judge is.
Yeah, no question.
But it's interesting, for example, Trump got a lot of play with this one. He claimed that the judge wouldn't allow him to go to his son's graduation from high school, right?
Yeah, right.
But the judge never said that. What the judge said was, I think Trump may have said, I have to be here every day, but I got to go to my kid's graduation. Now,
right.
Whether Trump would have ever gone to the kid's graduation anyway is it's questionable. Do you think Trump ever went to a parent-teacher conference?
No.
No. And
I do not think.
And I can tell you, I don't know what school the kid goes to, but I can guarantee you graduating from high school is not considered a big deal among those people.
No, I understand that.
I mean, when I graduated from high school at University High School, where half the parents were academics, I guess they showed up at the graduation. I don't know. I was kind of stoned at the time. But, well, then. I mean, I stopped all that stuff when I was 18. But it wasn't a big deal, I don't think. I was shocked that I can't remember even if my parents went. But, it was like, so then you got to fast forward from there to 20 years later, and my kids are starting to graduate, and from St. Louis Park, and that just shocked me, because what you had is you had a lot of the kids who grew up in fairly well-to-do families, everything was cool, and they went up and they got their diploma, and then you had kids who you could be pretty sure were the first ones in their family to graduate from high school, right? And there was cheering and shouting and applause. It was, that's when you really could see, it's kind of scary, it's just not in a way that you're afraid, but it's just you realize it, two completely different cultures there.
They are indeed. What's amazing about that is many, many years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said, "My God, impeaching Bill Clinton is a horrible idea. Whether he's guilty or not, you do not want to open the door to this kind of thing." But they did, and look what's happened. Now everybody gets dragged before the court.
Well, yeah, I mean, the House is a whole different matter, but the Republicans there wanted to impeach this guy who's cabinet man, Homeland Security guy, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And but the Senate said, no, we're not doing that. So that ended that. They did impeach him, but like a day later, he was acquitted, and that was that. Oh, what I was going to say, I'll stop after that, but what I was going to say about the Trump thing is so Fox News, I've seen like, you know, I've seen clips of like eight different Fox entertainers.
Right.
You know, the usual guys like Laura Ingraham and Hannity and those people saying, you know, it's an outrage that he's not going to be allowed to attend his son's graduation. And right. it's not true. The guy just said, you know, we'll face that when we come to it is basically what he said.
Yeah, I don't know. That whole situation. Do you think the national news does make our lives much more miserable?
It can, that's for sure. I mean, it depends. It also depends on what you call news.
Well, that's true, too. I guess the news, what'd you even call it? I don't even know if it's
a lot of times it's just entertainment.
It is just entertainment. And they're trying to shock you, and there's no question about that.
Yeah.
First of all, the part that I hate the most, and I hate it about Fox and CNN, stop trying to be funny. You're not funny.
No, leave that to the experts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Leave that for the late night monologues.
And those are horrendous now, too. Oh, my God, those shows are terrible.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it varies. I mean, I think Colbert has run the course. You know, it's just too much of one little thing, or even one big thing, but it's just he's hammering away. Let his writers come up with some other material. But Jimmy Kimmel, now he's got great writers.
What does he? I don't watch any of those shows. I can't watch any of those shows because I liked it better when Johnny Carson was at the helm because he didn't talk about politics at all.
Well, he just had the attitude that all politicians were terrible people.
And he was right.
But it was sort of a, well, even then, a lot of it was right. But it wasn't as much right then. But, you know, everybody laughed at that sort of thing. Yep. Just like, you know, one of the old school comedians who we never saw, like Will Rogers, you know.
Right.
People like, I mentioned him because he was from Oklahoma.
And, well, plus the fact that he was the best of all time, maybe.
Yeah, he was great. And with him, it was just, you know, it was all about humor. Yeah, it's not all about humor, that's for sure. With Jimmy Kimmel, it was kind of like the old, it was Stewart's show. It was kind of like The Daily Show.
Where John's back now.
Yeah, and he's back. But the funniest stuff always in these shows were the clips.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot funnier than any joke.
No question about it. Those shows have not been funny for many, many years. I can't name one that was as even close to as entertaining as Johnny Carson. We're not always funny, but Johnny Carson was always entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, he really was.
And these guys are great people on the shows.
And I liked, I got to be honest with you, I liked Joan Rivers' show, too. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I loved Joan Rivers. She called in all the time. Well, you remember back in the KQ days, she was always calling in.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. Yeah. I loved her.
Yeah, great attitude.
She had a wonderful attitude. Just a smart-ass, nice Jewish girl. That's all I know.
Is that text you're sending so important that you missed your turn? Is that text you're sending so important that you ran the red light? Is that text you're sending so important you didn't see the ball coming onto the road or the child that followed? Hi, I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. When you take your eyes off the road for even 4 seconds, your vehicle travels 100 yards. That's the entire length of a football field. If you absolutely have to text, you need to pull off the road somewhere safe and do it from there. Texting and driving is against the law and can cause serious injury or even death to you and others. Now that is important. We hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, please contact us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Going farther with Mike Bryant on your side, seeking justice for the injured. Bradshaw & Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their 6 Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
How much further is this going to turn into 1967, 68 again? Is that what's going to happen? We're going to start burning the neighborhoods down?
We already have.
Well, that's true. It's a very good point. I know, Andy, give me your take on it from a different generation. I mean, how does this all look to you?
Looks a lot like the 60s.
It does. There's no question. But, I mean, does it make you greatly uncomfortable?
Biggest reasons we moved.
Oh yeah,
getting
well,
the
I
hell
understand
out of the
that.
City.
Yeah, that's so sad.
Yes, it is.
Are people, and this is for both of you, are people that miserable, or do they just think they're that miserable that they want
think
to cause
that
such
miserable.
Turmoil?
Well, they're taught to believe they're miserable, and that's why you have from the top on down, you have this all this delusional behavior, like I can't get a break. I mean, when we see
right,
and we see it all the time, we see white billionaires saying they can't get a break. Come on.
There is that.
That's the thing is victimhood is the most valuable currency in the world right now. Mm-hmm. So much that everyone wants it, no matter how privileged they actually are.
Yeah.
And they'll find a way to get it.
So that I'm a victim thing is all, once again, kind of all about money.
I don't know if it's about money. It's about clout and the ability to do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do.
I guess. I don't know. It just makes me very, very sad. By coincidence, because I didn't know all this stuff was going to be happening and all the rest of it, by coincidence, my first post this morning was about the fact that, I'm supposed to hate this guy. No, I'm supposed to hate the other guy. I'm supposed to hate them both. I wouldn't waste my time on hating anyone. There are people I don't like, but I really can't name many people that I hate. I mean, do you waste your time hating someone?
Occasionally.
I knew you'd back.
You need an adrenaline rush.
No, don't get me wrong. Yours is the healthy attitude. I'm not bragging about that. I'm just saying, occasionally. I mean, after all, I've seen it, I don't. But I'm not saying that it's a great attitude. It's not. But there's a place for indignation, but it needs to be in a little drawer. Take it out occasionally if you need to, but it doesn't serve any purpose.
No, I agree. I do agree on that. And look, I went through periods too when I was pissed off at the world because that's one thing about Minnesota. I always thought, Mike, and I really did think that coming from the dirt poor, nothing going on, father's gone, mother's working 12, 14 hours a day, so I never saw her. I actually thought people would be happy for me when I succeeded, but they were not.
Hey, I was. I wrote a big story about you.
Yeah, you did. That's how I met you, as a matter of fact. There were a few people that were happy for me, but not very many. To this day, they resent the hell out of it. Instead of being happy for someone who succeeded without their help, they're pissed off that I didn't need their help.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I mean, it's in some way human nature. When I left the newspaper business and wound up in radio in a scandalous morning show, I can tell you that a lot of my former colleagues were just wishing so hard that I would fail.
Why?
Well, there might have been a number of reasons, but largely, I guess, it's because I wasn't part of their community anymore.
There you go.
And it was beneath their dignity you know, the morning show, but wasn't beneath mine, obviously. It met my dignity at the 50-yard line.
But didn't they look and notice that it was the highest-rated morning show in America?
Well, that's one of the reasons they probably hated it.
That's exactly the reason they hated it, because we didn't need them, and that pissed them off to no end. Isn't that sad?
Yeah, it is sad, yeah. And, you know, I mean, but when I look at that, and I have to smirk a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I could say smile, but smirk is probably more to the point.
Smirk's better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smirk is better.
I don't smirk much these days.
No.
As you get older, there's just not that much to smirk about.
I just got another email sent to me, and I do have to bring this up because I've known him for a million years. Mike's known him. Andy, you've known him too. And I don't know anything about this because I'm working at the time and all the rest of it. But apparently, Tony Lee has been off the morning show for like 3 weeks.
That's what I hear. He's MIA.
And I'm hearing that he doesn't feel well.
Oh, no.
The opening deal for me is he going to come back and work with you over, you know, over at Hubbard? I don't know. I've not talked to Tony in well over a year or something like that.
Yeah.
I always liked Tony. But apparently he's ill. Do you guys know anything about this? Does anybody know anything? Is he okay?
I just know he hasn't been on the show, and everyone's wondering why.
Yeah, I've been asked about it. Yeah, I've been asked about it, but I mean, obviously, I don't have any idea.
And one of the other cast members over there apparently applied for a job at Hubbard. That's not good news.
It could be really bad news.
Depending, yeah, I would think, you know. But I got some advice for that person. You ain't ever going to get a job at Hubbard. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So. But I'm concerned about, because I've known Tony Lee since, what, 1985?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that, 86, somewhere in there. I've known Tony Lee forever.
He came in pretty early.
Yeah, he did. So, you know, we worked together a couple of different times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm hearing from people now that he doesn't feel well.
Hmm.
Now, none of them have implied that he's got some serious illness or whatever, but apparently he's been sick for 3 weeks. So I'd like to, because like I said, I worked with the guy for a long time.
Yeah.
I just like to know if anybody knows what the real story is, how Tony's doing or what the problem is, and I hope it's not real serious.
He was on our podcast for the first, what, like 2 years, something like that?
2 years, yeah. Yep. Four different times I worked with him.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of different times at KQ, on the podcast we worked with him. Then, you know, moving forward from there. But, yeah, if anybody knows, I would love to know what the deal is, because I hope it's not too serious. But 3 weeks, being sick for 3 weeks, that's not a good indication, I wouldn't think.
No, you know, the first thing that I would think of, you know, was maybe he's just, you know, feeling a little bit blue, as my father would say.
Mm-hmm.
A little blue?
Yeah, that's my dad would say.
The blue of... Because of what?
You know, just feeling, you know, despondent.
Well, yeah, he's always been a very blue person,
right?
Generally,
well, that's
so.
True. Yeah, that's true. He is.
He seems to be, you know, pretty introspective. I don't know.
He's blue because he can't work with you, Andy, and me. Is that
exactly?
What he's blue about?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the deal. Yeah, that kind of thing. I just I did not know, because obviously I'm on at the same time, so I didn't know he was off the morning show at the queue for, I guess, 3 weeks now. It might even be a month now. I don't know.
Well, I didn't know it was that long, but I have heard from various people.
Yeah, I didn't know that, so I just I'm sorry to hear that. I hope he does feel better. So, Tony, if you're out there, I hope you feel better, pal. I don't know what it could be, and hopefully it's not too serious. That'd be great. But what the hell? That's so funny, though. He just disappears, so he's going back to work with Tom over at Hubbard. That's what it is.
That's got
to
be it.
That's got to be it. But, yeah, I have not heard from him, like I said, in like 13, 14 months. Haven't heard a word. But hopefully Tony Lee will recover from whatever he's going. If that is, I don't even know if that's the case, if it's true or not.
So, Andy, when you say he's missing in action.
He just kind of stopped doing the show one day, and no one knows why.
Okay.
I don't think he made an announcement or anything. He just kind of stopped coming in.
Well, yeah, that's that's scary.
Yeah. We'll see what's going on.
So you guys think it probably is some kind of an illness or something?
It could be. I mean, 3 weeks is a long time.
Yeah,
but,
long time.
He could have just gotten sick of it and retired.
Well, that's
how old is Tony?
Got to be 62, something like that.
Yeah, so not quite retirement age, but I don't know. If he was good with his money.
I don't know. Well, he's Jewish, come on. It might not be.
We're all good with money.
There you go.
Except those of us who invested with, what was the guy again?
Bernie Madoff?
Madoff.
Oh, Madoff. That was not a good move.
No. No, that could have cost people some money. No. I get a little scared when I hear it say that, when I hear you say that he just didn't come in one day, because again, that is more suggestive of something of a mood disorder. But I mean, we're just speculating. We shouldn't. But we all know Tony, and you know, we wish him the best. That's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. That's absolutely the case. So I don't know if I find out if it's something I can talk about, I will let you know what I find out.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. Like I said, I didn't know he was missing because I was doing a morning show at the same time he was.
Yeah.
So that is that deal. But, so I'll keep an eye out. Andy, you haven't gotten any emails or anything, what it might be?
Nope. No specifics yet.
All right. Well, hopefully it'll all clear up and everything will be a good situation. It's kind of an interesting business at this point anyway. You know, radio, so podcasting, all of this, it's changed everything. You know, you look at it now, radio, television, all that stuff is hanging on by a thread because, you know, the internet has taken over everything.
Although the women's college basketball tournament was a big hit on television.
What, 70 million people?
I don't know how many, but it was bigger than, of course, the men's tournament.
Is that because of Caitlin Clark?
Yeah, I would say it's 50% at least because of Caitlin Clark.
Who is Caitlin Clark?
She is the best women's or girls basketball player. She was still in high school.
Mm.
Basically the best girls high school basketball player in America.
She broke all the records for everything pretty much, Andy.
I see.
And she was making, I've heard like $2 to $3 million she was making in college.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, they because now college players can get paid, they signed deals, and she had deals with State Farm, and she had deals with, she got a huge deal now with Nike. So in addition to the $1 million they'll pay her a year, she makes her salary in WNBA of about $75,000.
And for the first time, the women's title game drew more viewers than the men's, averaging, it peaked at 24 million viewers.
So I think it was 70 million overall, I think, yeah.
It averaged 18.7, which is a lot.
Jesus. So when they say 24 million, I should know this, but I really don't, is that like 24 million televisions, or is that?
That's a good question. I don't know if they. Yeah. It says, well, it's ESPN and ABC. So I guess however they broadcast their stuff.
Yeah, because there's any number of ways they do it. And then there are any number of people watching in the same room, the same family.
Exactly. So this is the WNBA we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where she's going. But what we were talking about was college basketball.
That was the NCAA.
NCAA Iowa. Oh, she went to Iowa. How did she not end up going to Minnesota? I still don't understand that.
Well,
Iowa Pride.
She's from Iowa.
Yeah.
I suppose.
She's born in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
Born Des Moines. In Des Moines, Iowa.
Hey, you know, when you experience Des Moines as a child, you're not going to want to leave.
No. It's got everything you could want.
Fatino's used to be there. Used to be a great Italian restaurant. I don't think it's around anymore. It's called Fatino's.
Yeah.
God, it was good because I used to travel down there for Capitol Records. So I'd eat at Fatino's, and it was phenomenal. No, you know, Iowa's a lot better state than most people think it is.
Oh,
I love Iowa.
Yeah, there is some diversity there. You don't think of it that way. I haven't spent much time in Des Moines, but I've spent a little time in Altoona.
Altoona?
Because that's where the racetrack is there.
No, well, there you go. Gee, there's a shock.
And Altoona is in a suburb, and it's just like any suburb you'll ever go to.
When you go to a restaurant, you expect the chef to be an expert. You expect your auto mechanic to be an expert when it comes to fixing your car. You judge them both by the results of their work. Josh Arnold is an expert in investments and planning your financial future. Josh Arnold is my expert, and he should be yours, too. I talk to Josh every week, and he understands the market and the economy, and he knows how to plan for your retirement. Don't put it off another day. The man with your plan is Josh Arnold. Call Josh now for a no-obligation 48-minute evaluation. You've got nothing to lose, and you'll have an expert planning and managing your financial future.
Call Josh at 952-925-5608. That's 952-925-5608. Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC Security Investment Advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice. Tom Bernard is a paid endorser.
And I did get the email, and I understand. I got to bring this up, I promise. Because there are still people that say she did not break the record because the man who had previously set the record did it in 3 years.
Oh, because of Pete Maravich.
Pete Maravich.
Yeah, but Pete Maravich took like 50 shots a game, too.
Yes, he did.
I mean, he wasn't really a team. He was the team.
Pistol Pete.
Yeah, so that's there are all sorts of ways that you can shade these things. So let's just say, let's just say she deserves it. She broke the record.
I agree. She does deserve it. I mean, I watched some of the stuff she was, and then they lost the championship game to South Carolina. But South Carolina is one of the best teams in the country.
Well, South Carolina, I mean, if you added up the height of all of the South Carolina players versus Iowa, South Carolina was probably 2.5 feet taller.
Yeah, it's true.
And they had a 6'7" center. And, yes, she couldn't jump. She couldn't get off the floor, but she didn't have to. She'd just reach up. I think the tallest player for Iowa was like 6'2".
I think that's probably right.
In fact, South Carolina, I mean, I'm a basketball freak, so to me this is fascinating, even though you could see it coming. They had more offensive rebounds than defensive rebounds.
Isn't that amazing?
And you'll never see that at any level of basketball. Right. They had like 20 offensive rebounds and like 15 defensive rebounds. So they were always going to win because they would get two or three shots every time they went down the floor.
Is there a reason that women, and I'm talking about a physiological situation here, that so many women have gotten so tall in the last 25 years?
Noticed that, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. They're a lot taller than that. What would bring that on?
I don't know. I mean, until I was like 16, every girl I knew in my class was taller than me, so I just assumed. But you're right. In women's basketball in college, it's pretty. I don't remember seeing a lot of 6'5", 6'6" women.
No, absolutely not. There's a woman in our building. She looks to be maybe she's 35 years old, something like that. She's a very pretty woman, very well dressed, very attractive woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to be 6'4".
Dunk though?
I don't know if she can dunk or not, but when she gets on the elevator with her little puppy to take him on for a walk, I'm like, my God, that woman's tall.
So in 1912, the average 12-year-old girl was 57 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, 100 years later, 61.7 inches. So
almost
5 inches taller. But it does even out once they become adults. So they're about an inch taller as adults now.
But
teenage girls are really tall compared to how they used to be.
Because puberty is experienced much younger now.
That is a big... But even three-year-old girls are 3.7 inches taller than they were 100 years ago.
Well,
that's amazing.
That's a lot.
I think it's just nutrition is a big part of it.
Well, maybe.
We know so much more about nutrition than we used to, and that's a big part of growing is... If you get ideal nutrition, you're going to grow.
Yeah, I do think that was one of the reasons why I weighed 65 pounds and was 46 inches tall in when I went in seventh grade, because there wasn't a lot of nutrition to be had, where I was living at the time.
Right. No?
Right.
No.
A lot of government cheese?
It was just, Velveeta, we were one step ahead. But I didn't know
fancy stuff.
I didn't know what cheese was until I was probably 16, right? Because I thought cheese was Velveeta. I know it may be hard to believe, but that loaf of Velveeta was always somewhere in the refrigerator until it turned green.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good necessarily.
No, but eventually it did turn green because, we didn't like it that much. But that would be like, a cheese sandwich. That was Velveeta where I was.
Right.
And I had to make it myself, too. But that's, not a big deal, but I'm just saying... When I was 12 years old, I wasn't feeding myself really nutritious meals.
Right. No.
But to this point, I went to camp between my I guess it was between sixth and seventh grade, I went to camp. And maybe it was seventh and eighth, but all I remember is that I was at camp for a month and I gained 10 pounds.
Because of the food, just the chow alone, huh?
Three meals a day? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, well, that's
Bring
true.
It on. Pancakes, my God.
God, it's going to camp. Andy, you never went to camp, did you?
Yeah, once.
Oh, you went once.
I don't remember where or when or why, but I know I was there.
Well, God, the fact that you've erased it from your memory says it may have been traumatizing.
No, yeah, that's maybe. Just, I have entire years of my life that I don't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. Mm-hmm. I do, too. But I will never forget, Alex wanted to go to camp with her buddies, so we signed her up for the camp. It was a 2.5-hour drive up north, kind of like Detroit Lakes. That's about 2.5 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, some, give some or take, yeah, yeah.
Give or take. So Alex hops in the car, I hop in the car, and I drive her up there 2.5 hours and get her all set up and ready to go. And I drive back home, and as I get home, Catherine comes out and says, I got some bad news for you. I said, what's that? She goes, Alex does not want to stay at camp. You have to go get her. I said, I just drove 5 hours there and back. So now I do another 5 hours to go get her.
Whereupon she wanted to stay, right?
No, she didn't. She wanted to go. Yeah, she definitely didn't want to be there. And I don't know why. Did she ever explain to you, Andy, why she didn't want to be at camp?
No, but, I mean, she was a very fragile girl when she was very little.
Yeah, she was pretty fragile.
She did not want to be, you know, away from her parents and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I never went to camp, so I don't know what that's like, going to camp. I have no idea what that is
all
about.
I mean, I don't really... I remember playing on the playground, and I remember eating bagged lunches, and that's all I remember.
That was the big part of it for you?
Could have done that at home, but I didn't.
Yes.
All I remember is my parents said, you're going to camp, and I said, when can I leave?
I'm leaving right now. I'll start walking now go along.
And after like about a week in camp, I told my parents I wanted to stay longer.
Well, really?
Except for the fact that the people who ran the camp said, we don't even want him here now.
Mm-hmm. Why, what did you do?
Literally after like a week at camp, they sent my parents a letter saying he can never come back.
What did you do?
Well, a lot of it was about the great nail heist.
Nail heist?
The nail heist?
Yeah, what happened was they had re-roofed the cafeteria building, a huge building where we all ate. And so they re-roofed it. Apparently there was a leaking in there. And but when they were done, there were a lot of nails on the ground, and a lot of them had just, it was a very, I can't remember it ever raining that summer. So they were like under piles of dust and things where somebody could obviously hurt themselves. So what they said at the camp was they told us one day, hey, we're going to be collecting nails. We'll give you all a cup to store them in. And if you can find 10 nails, for every 10 nails, you can get a certificate good for a bottle of pop.
Oh, there you go.
Well, you know, that was we weren't getting bottles of pop at camp, rightly so, but we weren't. And so I sat there and I watched these kids, these poor, pathetic kids on the ground, you know, getting dirty and dusty and collecting nails, and which were probably rusty, you know. I wasn't going to do that. But I just kept my eyes on the nails, and so I saw one of the counselors come and pick up some nails and take it to a shed. Well, I guess you know where I found my nails.
You stole your nails?
From the shed, yes.
From the shed?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I, for some reason, I thought I would never get caught. But apparently someone saw me and dropped the dime on me.
Yeah, because you wouldn't think that anybody even pay attention to that, but they did.
Yeah, yeah.
What's he doing going in the shed?
Maybe it was the 5 bottles of pop that I had claimed.
Well,
maybe
that's
what...
caffeine delirium?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, I probably went, you know, as Sid Hartman always said to me, Gelfand, you went too far this time.
Too far this, let me just tell you.
I guess I went too far. Mm-hmm.
God, we were talking about Sidney this morning on the morning show, and it just... I do miss Sidney. I got to be very honest with you. I spent a lot of time with Sidney over at the old Lincoln Dell and hanging out with him. And I just, he was just such a piece of work to hang out with. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Sidney at the Lincoln Dell. He was in heaven when he was at the Lincoln Dell.
Telling heartwarming stories about Kid Can.
Oh, he knew Kid Can quite well.
Or Fergie, as he called him.
Fergie. That's right, he did. He called him Fergie, didn't he? Yeah. I forgot about that.
Fergie, which is, for those who don't know, and there probably are a lot, it was a short version of Fergessen, which means he's forgetful in Yiddish.
Huh. Yeah. Fergessen.
And that's why he never referred to Kid Can.
No, that
I remember.
Fergie.
But he did call him Fergie.
He did call him Fergie. Well, it's Sid and Kid Can and Hubert Humphrey used to hang out together quite often in North Minneapolis. And then later on, it wasn't Hubert Humphrey, it was Carl Pohlad.
Really?
Oh, yeah, those guys used to hang out quite a bit. Well, I know that Sid and Carl Pohlad were really good friends.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure they were, because Sid was attracted to anyone with money and power. No, I mean, he just was.
That's true. Yeah. He was. You're absolutely right.
And that's why, you know, Sid befriended all these people who were just poison to most people. Like, you know, who else would talk lovingly about Bobby Knight?
Bobby Knight.
Good friend.
Well, just because he threw four or five chairs every game. But other than that.
Yeah, he was such a nice guy.
God, he's dead. I can't believe that Bobby Knight is dead.
It didn't seem like he'd ever die. He just seemed like, you know, he was too powerful, too caustic.
Boy, he used to love throwing chairs. I never understood why the league, the NCAA, let him get away with throwing chairs like he did.
I know they suspended him for a few days or something once.
Yeah, they did.
That was when he threw the one like all the way across the
yes.
floor. It had to be bad for the hardwood there.
You would think. Well,
plus, if it caught a human, it might have killed them. But other than that,
I mean, at least Anthony Edwards threw like a folding chair. You know, it wasn't like a big heavy thing.
It wasn't. It was
no.
It was a wood folding.
Well,
chair.
He was upset.
At what?
Well, because he had just cost the Timberwolves their playoff berth.
Oh yeah.
By taking a 30-foot shot with 3 seconds left when he could have passed it to two teammates who were wide open.
Yeah, I never understood
that. But no, because he will tell you, he has to take the last shot.
Yeah, I guess.
He's earned it.
Speaking of the last shot, we got one more minute to go. Any closing words?
We've covered so much ground. What is there?
I love the ground we covered today. Covered all these different topics, get to all the good stuff.
Yeah.
I love that part about this show. All right, that is going to do it. We will talk to you later.
Marvelous.